it's interesting to note that in the Aseres HaDibros, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to everybody, speaking to all of Klal Yisrael, but the opening line is Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzei Slicha Ve'eretz Mitzrayim. Now Anochi Hashem Elokecha and not Anochi Hashem Elokechem is significant. The fact that it's not written in plural. It's written in the singular. And it's obvious as well, something that's already been noted many times, that the first of the Aseres HaDibros is not really much of a commandment. Don't steal, honor Shabbos. So these, all these things I understand, these are commandments. But Anochi Hashem Elokecha is an introduction. And it's almost a call for a relationship. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. And the idea that it's written in the singular perhaps is trying to impress upon us that every single person has an obligation to develop a personal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. In the Aseres HaDibros, Hashem speaks to every single one of us and tells every single one of us, you need to make me your king. You need to make me your God. So Hashem calls out to each one of us and obligates each one of us to develop a personal relationship with Him. And a personal relationship with Him means to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each one of us, in our own unique way. And the need for each person to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their own unique way is really predicated on a belief that every single person is unique. Chazal famously tell us that just like Kashem Shepartzufehem, just like our faces are unique, and it's amazing, even though you do have those doppelgangers, you know, you have people that, you know, looks like your twin, looks like, you know, looks like a carbon copy, but we all know that it's not a carbon copy. And in general, when you look at people, you know, as kids, you used to always talk about, sure, how like the hands on your the lines on your hand, or certainly we know from fingerprints, it's amazing. They're billions of people in the world, and yet no two fingerprints are the same. So just like each person is unique in how he appears on the outside, so too on the inside, each person is unique. And that means that each person's relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu is going to be different, and each person's personal shlemus is going to be different. Meaning the way you get to the shlemus and the way that shlemus manifests itself is going to be different for each person. And that's so vital to realize, because that's really just bolstering the idea that we're unique. If we weren't all unique, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have one plan for every single one of us, it would be exactly the same. But because each person is unique, so everyone has to find their own path. And the Malbim says this very beautifully in a pasuk that we all say all the time. Diracheha Darchei Noam, V'chol Nesivo Seha Shalom. So says the Malbim, the Derech as opposed to the Nativ. A Derech is the main path, the main highway, and the Nativ are the small little roads that come off the highway. So says the Malbim, Derechea Darchei Noam. There are main roads. And the main roads in Avodas Hashem are great. They're Darchei Noam. And we have to all remember that there is a highway, and that highway is Torah and mitzvos. But parallel to that main road are the nesivot. V'chol nesivot seha shalom. And he says, shalom here is miloshon shlemus. That the main road is great and it's beautiful, and we have to go on the main road, and we have to stay on the main road. But within the main road, there are lots of individual paths within that main road. And your shlemus will come from finding your nesiv, finding your unique path within the big derech, but finding your unique path is how you're going to reach your shalom, your shlemus. And we can't ignore the fact that Klal Yisrael are compared to the stars in the sky. And that's an amazing statement, because as we know, when we look up at night, every single star shines beautifully and brightly on its own. Each one of us is a star. Well, each star has its own beautiful light. I think we've noted this before, that there's the Klal Yisrael compared to the sand and Klal Yisrael compared to the stars. And there's a huge difference between those comparisons. because a grain of sand is basically imperceptible. You can't see a grain of sand by itself. The only time you see sand is when there's a huge pile of sand. When you pick up sand, then you can see it. When you look out onto a beach, you can see sand because there's so much of it. But if I had a road, let's say there was a road or a desktop, and there was one grain of sand, you wouldn't see it. It's insignificant by itself. And that's because there's an element of us that needs the klal. We can't do this alone. We need a community. We need a minyan. We need a chavrusa. We need to be part of a greater klal. But we're not only compared to sand. If we were only compared to sand, that would take away a lot of our personal identity. We're also compared to stars, because each star shines beautifully on its own. And that's why Klal Yisrael is also compared to a star. We have to recognize our relationship to the klal as sand, but we also have to recognize that we're stars and that each star shines beautifully on its own. Now, as I've been alluding to, the room for individuality in Avodas Hashem has to be embarked upon within the broader system. There is a system of Avodas Hashem. There are mitzvos that we have to do. We can't just say, you know what, I feel like serving Hashem by worshiping idols, so I'm sincere and therefore I'm going to worship idols. You can't do that. Oh, what about my personal expression? So the personal expression has to be within the box. There's a box, but it's a very, very broad box. It's the derech, derachel darchei noam. And within that derech, there are many nitivot. In Parshas Noso, the Ramban makes this ha'ara very beautifully, and it'll hopefully give meaning to a part of Kriyas HaTorah that until now might have seemed tedious. In Parshas Noso, so we know that we have a description of the karbanos brought by the Nesiim of the Shvatim, the Nesiim, and we read each one, karbano, karas kesef achash, shloshim ayah, vishkolot, right? And we read it over for each one. It's almost crazy. Just say there were, you know, X number of Nesiim, and this was the karbon, because if you read the psukim, it's the exact same karbon. And we just keep saying it over again and again and again. It takes up dozens of psukim, so much time. So the Ramban says a beautiful ha'ara. The Ramban says the reason why the Torah wrote it each time is because the Torah is trying to teach you something. They're not the same. If it was exactly the same karbon, the Torah would write it once. What do I mean it's not the same? It's exactly the same. Look at the psukim. It's exactly the same words. And the Ramban says, no. On the outside, they were the same. It was the same number of animals. It had the same rules. But each Nasi brought it with his own unique personality, his own unique kavanos. And you know what that did? That transformed the karbon. Something that on the outside looks exactly the same as something else can have infinitely more meaning because it's your karbon and what you bring to the table. And that's a message for all of Avodas Hashem, because I daven and you daven, and I shake a lulav and you shake a lulav. We're all doing the same actions. We're doing the same mitzvahs. We're all on that same broader derech. But what you bring, how you do it, that's your personal nesiv. That's your personal path. And that's your unique expression in Avodas Hashem. I believe that in our yeshiva, the reason why the paroches is all of the different stones from the breastplate, the choshen, of the Kohen Gadol, is because of this idea. Because why isn't there just one shevet? Why are there a number of shvatim in Klal Yisrael? The reason why there are a number of shvatim in Klal Yisrael is because each one has his unique way that he serves Hashem. And if you look in the brachos of Yaakov to his children, so Yaakov picks up on the nekuda that's special about each child, and he gives him a bracha for his derech of Avodas Hashem. This one's going to be in the base medrash, this one's going to be out on the seas doing business. Each one has their own way that they serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it would be such a shame if we lost our identity as Shvatim, you know, in our gullus existence, so we don't know what shevet we're from. And that's very sad. Because right now we can make the mistake in thinking that everyone's the same. Everyone does the same Avodas Hashem. When you have the reality of Shvatim, then you know that each one has his own unique light to contribute. And that is the choshen that the Kohen Gadol wore. Each stone was unique, it was beautiful, but it was different. This one was red, this one was purple, this one was blue. What do you mean? Blue is beautiful and nothing else. No, that's not true. This stone is beautiful and that stone is beautiful, even though they're different. And if they're all on the Choshen, they're all there to serve Hashem, then they're all very, very beautiful, as long as they fit, as long as they're in the box, as long as they're in within the boundaries, so there's a tremendous room for personal expression. And that yesod of the Ramban, that idea of the parochas that we have in yeshiva, to always remember that there's different shvatim, that's something that we need to tap into in order to best serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and reach our shleimus. The Zohar writes that this is really the power of Tefillah B'Tzibur. The power of Tefillah B'Tzibur is not the fact that you have 10 people davening together. The power of the Tzibur is that you have 10 individuals davening together. When I contribute in my way and you contribute in your way and someone else contributes in their way, and then we come together and work together, that's the power of Tefillah B'Tzibur. Think of an army. An army, the strength of the army is in its soldiers. But what does it mean, its soldiers? So there's the Air Force, there's the Navy, and there's the foot soldiers, and there's the intelligence, and all the different people. And together, that's a powerful army. If we only had foot soldiers, so we would be destroyed in a second. If we didn't have a Navy and submarines and airplanes and helicopters. That's, again, the Havdil, that's Tefillah B'Tzibur. You come with your helicopter, someone else comes with their machine gun, someone else comes with their airplane, someone else comes with their boat, and now we're ready for Tefillah B'Tzibur. Now we all come together, and that's the power. And even though we're all saying the same words, going back to the Ramban, we're all saying the same words of davening. But what you put in, and what I put in, what a third person puts in, so all that comes together, and it creates something very powerful. And this reality, this yisod, which so many people, I think, sometimes forget about, this reality is mechayiv each one of us to find our unique derech and avodas Hashem, our unique contribution within the general system. Sometimes it's easy to make the mistake and think, well, you know, this job is more important, that job is more important. But if you go back to our mushal of the army, obviously the fighter pilot gets all the you know, fanfare, fighter pilot. But the technician who screws on the wings is just as important. If nobody's screwing on the wings, the fighter pilot will take off and he's not going to be a very successful fighter pilot. Everyone has their job and everyone has their mission. There's a beautiful chazal. The chazal described how on the pasuk that chazal said that be'achris hayomim, so all the tzaddikim are going to dance in a circle around HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's going to be a mechol of tzaddikim, a circle of tzaddikim. And they're all going to point to the middle and say, this is my Hashem, this is Hashem. So I think they explain that the idea of all the tzaddikim dancing in a circle with Hashem in the middle, kaviyachol, and everybody pointing at him, saying, this is our Hashem. So when you have a circle, so every point on the circle is equidistant from the middle. You don't have front row, second row, third row. And I think that there's an important message there about how when each one of us comes in our unique way, you know, we get, this guy's really good at Ian and this guy's really good only at Tanakh. So, all right, listen, it's nice to be good at Tanakh, but you know, the Ian, that's the Iker. Well, Ian's the Iker if that's who you are and that's your unique contribution to Klal Yisrael. But if your soul is one that's more mesugal for learning Tanakh, that's going to be your amazing contribution. And we just quoted the Malbim. The Malbim wrote an amazing perush on Tanakh. And they said that Rav Chaim Brisker came to him and tried to convince him to stop writing on Tanakh and to continue writing on Halacha because he'd started writing a work on Halacha. And the Malbim said, listen, someone has to write a perush on Tanakh, especially in light of the Maskilim that are writing commentaries on the Bible. We need a commentary that can stand up to the maskilim. So Rav Chaim, if you write the perush on Tanakh, so I'll continue writing on Halacha. So they say that Rav Chaim said, okay, fine, so you continue writing on Tanakh. But whether the story is true or not, the idea is that each one has their unique contribution. And the Malbim, oh, Malbim on Tanakh, it's such an amazing, inspiring perish. So let's just talk about a couple of ramifications. Again, the number one ramification of this yisod is that it's mechayiv every single person to find their unique derech and avodas Hashem. But I think there are other ramifications that have to be kept in mind as well. They complement. They obviously don't contradict what we just said, but they complement. One of them, for instance, is valuing our avoda and valuing the specific avoda of others. Now, to Hashem, every single one of us is unique. Every single one of us. We already said in the Rambam, Hashem does not create anything for no reason. So that means that if Hashem created you, you have something unique to do in this world. It's a wild thought. A secular perspective says, no, you exist because a cell formed and it eventually turned into a person. And that's just who you are. And you're just a product of biology. And there's no plan for you. There's nothing special about you. That couldn't be more antithetical to what we believe in. If you exist, it's because Hashem created you and gave you a very unique and special mission. And your Torah, your mitzvos, is going to contribute something that no one else can contribute. And without you, something's going to be missing. And I want to share with you a story. It's a story that I first heard from my father-in-law. I've heard him say over the story a few times. And then afterwards, I found it in one of Rabbi Krohn's books, which the collection of the Maggid stories. The story basically goes as follows. There was a very accomplished writer who was working on a biography about the very famous conductor, Toscanini. So he called Toscanini and he asked, "Can I visit you? Am I able to interview you tomorrow night?" So he said, "Listen, I'd be very happy to meet you, but tomorrow night I'm listening." He was an older man already. He was a great conductor. And he said, I'm listening tomorrow night on the radio to an orchestra. And it's an orchestra that I had conducted last year or a few years ago. And they have a symphony on the radio and I would like to listen to the orchestra." So this writer, this biographer, said, "You know what? That's great. Is it okay if I come? I want to watch you as you listen to the orchestra. You know, maybe after after the concert's over, we can talk about it." So Toscanini agreed and he said, "But there's one condition. I don't want to be distracted at all. I want to sit. I want to listen. I want to concentrate. I want to hear the beauty of the sounds of the instruments. I don't want to be bothered." So he agreed, obviously. So the next day he came to his house and he sat next to him. And Toscanini sat there and he listened to the orchestra and to the concert. And when it was over, so the writer said, "Wow, that was amazing. Wasn't it magnificent?" And Toscanini said, "No, actually it wasn't." So he said, "What do you mean? What was wrong with it?" So he says, "Well, I'll tell you the problem. There's supposed to be 120 musicians in this orchestra. And of those 120 musicians, 15 violinists. And tonight, there were only 14. So the writer couldn't believe what he was saying. Like, "Are you kidding me? You're listening on the radio and you think that they were missing one violinist out of 120 musicians, but he's not going to question this great maestro." So he goes home and he decides, "No, I'm going to investigate." So he does a little bit of research and he finds out who the director of the orchestra was. And he calls him on the phone the next day and he says to him, "How many people were in the orchestra last night? And how many are supposed to be there? How many were there?" So the director's like, "Oh, that's so funny that you're asking me, because, you know, we're supposed to have 120. But one of the violinists called in sick and he wasn't able to make it." And the writer was in absolute awe. How could Toscanini, sitting at home listening on the radio, how could he have noticed the missing sound of one violinist out of an entire orchestra of 120 musicians? So that night he went back to Toscanini and he said, "Listen, I have to ask you a question. How were you able to discern the missing violin in the orchestra?" And Toscanini answered and said as follows. He said, "Listen, there's a big difference between me and you. You're in the audience. And to you, it's a nice sound. It sounds good. But I'm the conductor. I know what every sound does. I know how every sound comes together to make the concerto that we're listening to. And when one little note is missing, so I'm able to tell. It takes away from the beauty of the orchestra. And Rabbi Krohn uses this story, and he says that, you know, we're all musicians in Hashem's beautiful orchestra. And in an orchestra, you know, the drummer needs the celloist, and the celloist needs the flute, and the flute player needs the violin. And if something's missing, you might not notice it, I might not notice it, but you know who notices? The great conductor. And to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each one of us has our own beautiful note, our own beautiful contribution to this great orchestra that is this world. Your mitzvos are unique in a way that I won't be able to perceive. You won't even be able to perceive. But the orchestra, the maestro, the great maestro with a capital M, who's sitting and listening to the orchestra, so for sure he notices. And what that means for us, you know, sometimes we might sit in the Beis Medrash and we see another guy and, you know, we chazered and we learned and we still don't understand it. And there's another, and he's understanding it so well. And sometimes we might get this feeling of, you know, what am I really contributing here? You know, what does my learning do? What are my tefillos? You know, I'm spaced out all the time. I can't really concentrate so well. And look, this guy's davening with so much kavan. And he could sometimes get that feeling of, you know, maybe this is really not for me. Maybe I should be investing in other places. Because at the end of the day, what am I really doing? And, you know, sometimes we look at other people and we think that. What's this guy doing in Yeshiva? What? He's coming back for a second year. I mean, he barely learned in Shana Aleph. What's he going to do Shana Bet? And sometimes we have those types of thoughts. And we should never underestimate the contribution that we're making, the contribution that others are making. Every single note is infinitely valuable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that, I think, is another very important lesson that we learn from this idea of each person's own individual Avodas Hashem. I think it also is mechayev us as parents and as teachers and even as friends to recognize the value of investing in others, meaning not just valuing other people's Avodas Hashem, but being willing to invest in them. Now, we live in a world, in a culture, where everything's about being well-known in a headline. So if you're able to give a shiur that hundreds of people listen to, so then, all right, that's a good endeavor. But let's say you're going to give a shiur and there's only going to be one person, 5 people, 10 people. Is that any less valuable? The unique, each person sitting there listening, and your unique Torah that you're giving over, because it's coming through your personality, so it has a place, it has a makom, and it has a unique place, and it's needed. Or else you wouldn't be here. I think I told you once that Rav Hutt, in the yeshiva, Rav Hutt, so his mother is a balas tshuva. And when she was becoming frum, she saw an advertisement. I think I'm getting the story right. So she saw an advertisement for a shiur that was being given in Denver. And she saw that she was being given some Rav's shul or his house, whatever it was. So she showed up for the shiur, and she was the only one who was there. So she said to the Rav, you know, okay, so I guess I'll go, you know, I guess no shiur. He's like, what do you mean? You came. If you came, I'll give the shiur. I believe it was Rabbi Twersky, who was a chashuv Rav. And, you know, our first thought is like, oh, one person, you know, one person comes to the shiur, so it's not worth the rabbi's time. But think about, she ended up going, and it turned into like almost like a personal shiur, I think, if I got the story right. And now look what happened. Now we have Rav Hutt, and we have all Rav Hutt's Talmidim, all because he said, I'm going to invest in this one person. So we should never underestimate the value of teaching, even just one Talmud. The Rabbi Lamb was Nifter this past week. So I remember when I was in Smicha, so he came to speak to the Smicha guys, and he said a really amazing ha'ara. Very good, Benny. A very amazing ha'ara that, you know, it stuck with me. It was 20 years ago that I heard it, but it really stuck with me. He told the story of an old man who was on the seashore. and he was throwing starfish that had washed up onto the shore. He was throwing them into the ocean. So a little kid walked by, and he says, you know, old man, what are you doing? So the old man, you know, picks up another starfish and throws it back into the sea. And he used to be an outfielder, so he was like, really, you know, he was getting them out there. And he says to the little kid, he says, I'm throwing the starfish back into the sea. So the kid says, yeah, but look at the beach. There's like hundreds of starfish. You're never going to get them all back into the ocean. It's not worth your time. The old man picks up another starfish and he says, well, it was worth it to this starfish. And he throws it back into the ocean. And the idea is that each starfish that the man saved, so for that starfish, it was the most significant event in the starfish's life. It's true. When you look at all of the starfish that need to be thrown back into the sea, so it looks like a very small thing that's being done. But never underestimate how with the impact that you can have on one person, because that person's avodas Hashem is so unique, so valuable. Probably the most relevant area for you guys at this stage of your life is in terms of what we learn. We know that Chazal tell us that in adam lo min elam ashalibo chafetz, and Rav Kook writes that each person's soul has an absolute unique portion of Torah that enlightens it specifically. In Oros HaTorah, he writes that, you know, sometimes it's hard because we have starim and we have, you know, morning seder that we have to go to, and we have bikiya seder that we have to go to. And sometimes it's not our unique part of Torah that we love learning. First of all, I love learning Tanakh. I love learning Machshava. But I have to learn Iyun, I have to learn Bikiyas. And you do have to learn Iyun, you do have to learn Bikiyas. You have to get proficiency in those areas. But don't ever lose, he writes, don't ever lose your unique favor. He says, Kol adam echad tzarech lasot pe'esek shelo. B'mesh yesh lo al zeh achana. U'b'yichud adover noeg binyanei alimud. And even though, lif'amim, it's kasha for a person to learn mashlibo chafetz, but you have to be strong. Don't ever lose your unique area of learning. And this is something I think, as someone who's been in yeshiva for a long time, something that I struggle with, because I'm interested in lots of different areas. I like machshava, but you know, you always get these vibes, you know, iyun. And if we're choosing machshava because, you know, iyun's so hard, so I'm just going to do machshava, it's much easier. So then that's not what Rav Kook is talking about. Now, if you're intelligent enough to be able to do Ian, and it's just a question of pushing yourself and being able to work harder. But sometimes, and I don't know how many years it takes until you have the ability to be able to say it, but certainly at a point you're able to say, listen, my soul is drawn towards this area of learning, drawn towards these types of sugyas. I like learning on the daf. I like learning more conceptually. I like learning Tanakh. I like learning Gemara. I like learning the Gemara Halacha L'maisa. I like learning Lomdus. I like looking up the Rambam. No, I like to basically just stay with Gemara Shetosfos. I like to work out a Shver Rambam. So each person has his own unique flavor. And you don't have to feel bad about that, because you have to realize you're unique. Just like you have your own unique mission in the world, you also, says Rav Kook, you also have your unique chelek of Torah. I'm going to end with the very famous Pasuk in Mishlei. Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. That's something that we have to remember as we're being mechanech ourselves. Everyone has a nar inside them. A nar means a wild side, a side that needs to be tamed. So chanoch l'nar al pi darko. Whether it's you, whether it's your Talmud, whether it's your child, you have to realize that you're there to give them what they need. You know, sometimes a Rebbe just feels like he's got some great vorts. He has got great Torah. And he just needs someone sitting in the room because he just wants to say it over. I think this era from the Brisker Rav that when a cow nurses its baby, so does the cow do it because the milk is hurting the mother? You know, her udders are full with milk. She just needs to get the milk out? Or is she giving it in order to give sustenance to the baby? You can have a Rebbe in the exact same situation. He's just filled with great Torah. So he just wants to get it out. So he just needs someone to listen. But it means it's not really about the Talmidim. It's really about him. He just wants to get it out, get the Torah out. There are others who say, no, I want to feed this child. I want to give it the sustenance it needs. So therefore, he says, what does this Talmud need? What Torah does this Talmud need? What type of hityachasut does this Talmud need? That's what it means, chanoch lenar al pidarko. And if a person, the Gra writes, how you have to really figure out with a Talmud or with a child, what are these person's natural proclivities? What are these person's natural tendencies? Right? He quotes, like the Gemara says, that a person might have a natural tendency that they need blood. So if you let that go untamed and you don't fulfill that need, they might become a murderer. But if you say, oh, you need blood? Okay, let's make you a moel. You need blood? Let's make you a shochet. So you just turn that wild, natural propensity and you just channeled it towards mitzvos. And that's chanoch lenar al pidarko. It's realizing, what does this child need? What does this person need? What do I need? What's going to allow me to make my own unique contribution to Torah, to mitzvos, and ultimately to Klal Yisrael?